morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which has a veterans memorial that is absolutely beautiful and is going to be dedicated on November the 14th at 11:30, part of the Salute to Veterans Armed Forces Day, the same day as the MTSU Louisiana Lafayette football game, and the first Saturday after Veterans Day. It is a gorgeous wall that has names of MTSU faculty, students, and staff and administrators who perished in the service of their country engraved on it, and overlooking a plaza where brick pavers engraved with messages from donors are serving as a permanent memorial to people who gave the last true measure of devotion. Here to talk with us about it are two members of the Veterans Memorial Committee, Dr. Derek Frisbee of the Department of History, who also happens to be a Desert Storm veteran, and I know you don't say ex-Marine, it's always a Marine, Semper Fi, and Mr. Don Witherspoon, who is a devoted MTSU alum and a veteran of the Vietnam War. Thank you for being with us today.
Also a Marine.
Also a Marine. Okay, I didn't know we were branded the service. Derek, about 4 years ago, this idea germinated in the brain of one of your faculty colleagues from the Political Science Department, Dr. Andrei Korobkov. Why don't you start by telling us what the inspiration for the MTSU Veterans Memorial is?
Well, it's sort of cliche, but it's one of those days I'll always remember. We picked up a copy of The Sidelines and read a story about Andrei Korobkov and Rob McDaniel, political science professors, who were wanting to construct a memorial for one of their fallen students. And the more I read about their idea, the more I became intrigued by it. Contacted Andre about something that I might could contribute to help to this project. And from there, we began on, I guess, what is now almost a five-year odyssey to construct the Veterans Memorial here on campus. And we're very proud of it. And I'm very pleased with the support we've gotten from the campus community to help do that over the last 5 years.
Did you happen to know Ken Ballard, the young student who died in Iraq, who Andre and Rob had in some of their classes?
No, I never knew Ken Ballard, but I can tell you that in many ways, I sort of put myself in Ken's shoes. I remember that when I deployed to Desert Shield, Desert Storm, many of the political science faculty here and many of the history faculty, people like Jack Turner, and Andrew Gulliford and others supported me in a lot of the things that we did over there. And I knew that the bond between professors in that department and our Department of History and students was very special. And I knew that by losing Ken, Andre and Rob had lost a true friend as well.
Don, how did this project come to your attention?
At the time I became involved, I was working on a special project committee for the MTSU Foundation. Some of the faculty that we just discussed came to the special projects committee, and they were looking for seed money from the foundation to get the project started. They were granted seed money by the foundation at that year, and then they come back to the foundation periodically to report their progress. But because of my involvement with the Marines in Vietnam and because of my interest, I also was added to the committee at some point in time and have been involved, you know, from that point.
And remind us, how much seed money did the committee start out with?
I'm not sure the amount. It was probably either 10 or 15, but it
was actually $5,000.
$5,000, okay. Yeah. Generally, the foundation gives the grants in like 5,000 increments, and it has been a few years, and I don't recall exactly how much it started with, but it was a start, and obviously Derek and other members on the committee have done a great job, you know, selling the papers and getting donations, you know, since then.
And from that point, after the seed money, it's all been private donations since then. We're not talking about taxpayer funds going into the wall, the pavers, the landscaping, or any of the accoutrements of the memorial, which is outside of the Tom Jackson Building.
This is a grassroots effort. This is the very definition of one, in fact. I mean, it started with faculty. It spread out to the community and to the administration. And we've had almost no university or state money go into it. We did have some university money that was utilized to create part of the space, to clear out an old concrete pad that was there, but that was part of the university master plan anyway, and that they just used our project as sort of an excuse to go ahead and rip up that sort of small concrete area and replace it with this. So it's largely been done through the efforts of private donations and fundraising events that we had, sort of like a 5K run, and we've went out to various community groups and given presentations on the history of MTSU's veterans and the history of the memorial itself, and it's been a rewarding experience.
One of the things that I was struck by when I got involved was, if you look at the experience that we have now versus the experience as to when I and others from MTSU returned from Vietnam, one of my concerns as the project came forward to the foundation was, how would it be accepted by the faculty and the students on campus? And I was very surprised to see it was not only accepted, it was really embraced. And I was very impressed by that.
There were no lingering echoes of the animosity that was visited upon you and other Vietnam, returning Vietnam veterans,
right,
upon coming,
right,
back to the States.
Right.
I think those echoes have more or less dissipated into an appreciation of the service of all veterans, regardless of the conflict or the administration responsible for the conflict, right, or the politics of the,
right,
conflict in question.
And I think when we gathered to talk about what the memorial would be utilized for, you know, we wanted it to be a usable space. We wanted it to be a place not only where students could learn about the service of our other students. We wanted it, you know, this was a memorial for people to use however they wanted to use it. If they wanted to sort of protest some military involvement in some, you know, part of the world, this was a place they could do that too. There would be no restrictions on what that could be. And I think that actual idea of being able to sort of embrace all viewpoints and all perspectives actually came, I don't know if it came from you specifically, but it came from other members that had been veterans of the Vietnam period, that they felt very strongly that there should be really no sort of limits on what could be the space could be used for.
Free speech being one of the freedoms for which all
veterans
fought.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think one of the things that has really promoted the memorial is that it's really not a glorification of the military or, mm-hmm, or war or, you know, anything else. It's really, you know, memorial to, you know,
right,
to the people who made this sacrifice.
I think
that's been very important.
As we went through the design phase of this project, I think we went through various designs and things that might have been perceived in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And through the work of the committee, we were able to come up with a design I'm just so proud of. Mm-hmm. I think the members of campus are proud of it too.
Mm-hmm.
The only bad thing is Dr. Sloan won't be around to see it.
Yeah, Dr. Sloan was an integral part of this effort. She cut a lot of red tape for us, mm-hmm, early on. And, of course, her father had been such a motivating part of this, mm-hmm, campus for so long as well.
Let me try to, since this is radio for the most part, do a better description of the memorial. It's polished granite. It is a bipartite memorial. There are two different sections of it that do not touch, but they are at their apexes at totally opposite ends of the two walls, and then they slope down toward a center space with a little space to walk in between. There is a polished granite podium with a star on it, and that is separate, but in between the two parts of the wall. There are names engraved on one side of the wall, the north side of the wall that faces the Tom Jackson Building, and on the other side of the wall that is on the south side, there are some stars on one part of the wall, and then on the other part of the wall it says, "To support and defend the Constitution," which was the whole purpose of it. And then in the plaza, on the ground, there are these beige-colored brick pavers, which are still available if you would like to make a donation of $150, and we'll tell you how later in the broadcast. that different people have engraved with different messages in tribute to veterans, or just mentioning of their name or who the donor happens to be. And the Middle Tennessee State University seal is in the middle of the plaza. Now, I understand we're also going to have some landscaping and some benches.
That's right. Phase one of this project included the plaza with the brick pavers and the memorial itself. Phase two included some tangential aspects of the project, some park benches for students to sit in, as well as some memorial for each branch of service, where we believe now that will probably take the form of planters that will have the seals carved into them for the various service branches.
And that would also include POW/MIA?
Yes, the POW/MIA has been included in that as well.
Don, how do you see this as a project bringing the university community and the greater external community together?
Well, I think it's an example of where the university is honoring and its own, but it's also honoring the community. And I think what we have here is something where people in the community can come, you know, when they're at the university or at other times, and see how these people have been memorialized. For example, football weekends or basketball games or volleyball or whatever time anyone might be on campus would be a great time to come by and see this. It's the fall, football season's going on, and we have a routine where we usually come for the Raider walk and then go by the memorial to see what's going on, how much more has been added, and what's going on. We always encounter people who haven't heard about it. They're very impressed when they see it. They want to know about it, and in many cases want to know how they can get involved with it.
The university will be celebrating its centennial in 2011. Middle Tennessee State Teachers College having been founded in 1911. And Derek, why don't you talk a little bit about the enormous task that you took on researching the names of the individuals who were part of the MTSU community who, from World War I up through the current conflicts, served their country and perished in the line of duty.
Well, I'm sort of a third-generation MTSU product myself, and I always knew that traditions had been a part of this university. I mean, we've always had sort of a tradition of excellence here, I believe, and this was really an honor for me to be able to help Andre and Rob go back through our university's history and trace the sort of evolution of how closely veterans have helped this campus grow. And it was really a touching, emotional process to be able to read every issue of the Sidelines that was available and follow the stories of these individuals, especially in World War II. Many of them wrote back to campus their experiences. Roger Smith, who is one of our highest decorated alums, was awarded the Navy Cross before he perished on Guam. He would write back poems and other stories. And to follow him, not knowing at the time the end result, to follow those stories in the pages of the Sidelines and then to see that headline, Roger Smith, former class president, athletic hero, all-around guy on campus, killed, really impressed me a lot. And I wanted to carry forward a lot of those traditions that were utilized in World War I and World War II, like the Gold Star program, and want to integrate those traditions in our memorial. One side of our memorial actually has a constellation of stars, and there is one star for every individual on the opposite side of that wall, and that will be a tradition that we carry forward as part of that Gold Star tradition that was started back in World War I.
There's also a single star on the podium as well.
There's a single star on the podium with the inscription underneath it, to those who have fallen, who were students first, and who served their country with honor. And I think that really sort of embodies that MTSU spirit of service. We always talk about the university's mission being teaching, research, and service. Few people embody that as do our veterans who come here to learn. Many of them have gone out and become teachers and served in the military as well. And I think this memorial helps bind the community and the university even closer together.
You were really in a unique position when it came to digging for all of this information, being both a veteran and a historian, doing all of the fact-checking that
and
you had to do.
And alumni, too. Yeah, it was a laborious process at times. The old copies of the sidelines are not in great shape. We're working on preserving those, and that's something that's come out of this effort is we've called attention to the fact that we, strangely, for all our emphasis on tradition, have not done a very good job of preserving our university's history at times, and working very closely with the Gore Center and the Special Collections Library on campus to continue that preservation process so that the next time someone has to do this, they won't have to necessarily go through all the hurdles that I had to jump through.
The Department of Defense put a few hurdles in your way too, did it not?
Well, it's the Department of Defense and some of the archival procedures can be difficult to navigate at times. Most people don't realize, unless they've done genealogy, that in 1974 a fire swept through the St. Louis records facility that destroyed almost the entire Army personnel records from World War II. Mm-hmm. And so if you're looking for Army personnel in World War II, that's not a great place to start. You have to go back and look at operational records, command, headquarters, notations, and things. So it can be quite tedious to navigate that.
Did the 9/11 crash hurt any of the more modern record keeping at the Pentagon, or did that not happen on that side of the building?
It didn't. It wasn't affected by that necessarily. Some of our more modern veterans, Ken Ballard's case in particular, garnered some national attention for the way the military handled notification of his death. His death was actually one of the first casualties of the Iraq War, Operation Iraqi Freedom. And the controversy over the circumstances of his death have drawn coverage in, I believe, Newsweek magazine and on several network shows. And of course, Sergeant Mark Galinsky's son, the very famous photograph taken by the DNJ of the Marine officer handing the flag to him at the funeral is a picture that has come to serve as an image that most people will never forget of this conflict around the country.
Don, could you tell us a little bit about your military service? How did it all begin for you? What were you doing at the time you enlisted and so forth? And where were you sent and how long was your tour of duty?
Well, I guess you could say my military experience started at MTSU. At the time I was enrolled here from 1960 to 1964, students were required to be ROTC students for the first 2 years. So where Tucker Auditorium and all that building is there, it used to be a drill field, and I can remember drilling there with the rest of the ROTC students. But my freshman year, I became interested in a program that the Marine Corps had for commissioned officers, and I don't know if Derek went through this program or not. Were you a PLC as well?
I was in the PLC program.
Right. It's called a platoon leaders class program, and you go to officer candidate school during the summers between various years while you're in college. You can go through on a full summer or two summers, whichever is more convenient, I suppose. But I signed into that program, and then when I graduated in 1964, went to Quantico, Virginia for a period of time, went to Camp Pendleton, California, and then actually went overseas with a unit, which is later on kind of unusual. People later on in the war did not go over as units, they went over as replacements. But I was in the in what was known as the Accor area of northern South Vietnam in 1966. Served with the 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines. And then came back, and my obligation was 3 years because I was a reserve officer, and served then in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and that completed my active duty. I was in what was called the inactive reserve for a period of time after that.
How did you feel about being assigned to Vietnam? Did you anticipate that possibly could happen to you?
At the time that I signed into the program, Vietnam was only a very remote piece of property on the other side of the world. We had advisors in country at that point in time, but no units, so to speak. It was not until 1965, I suppose, when I was at Quantico, that we learned that this was going to change. And of course, at the time, we never thought that would be happening to us, but later on, of course, it did. But the officers and men that I served with were there. We felt like we were there to do the right thing, and we did not have any of the sometimes you've seen movies and heard accounts that were not very complimentary of what was going on with the military at that time, and in the units that I served with, that was not the case.
Derek, it's one thing to be drafted or to have an obligation as a result of attending one of the service academies or something like that, but given the all-volunteer army that we have today, or the people in other conflicts who took it upon themselves to enlist, sometimes lied about their age in order to get into the service in days of yore, tell me a little bit something about the mindset of a young man or a young woman who has their whole future in front of them, perhaps had chosen to go to college as part of a career path that they'd had their set on, had their heart set on, and then all of a sudden something calls them to put on the uniform of their country and perform a mission.
Well, I think there are obviously a group of people in our community, in our communities, that feel obligated to give something back to the community. I know that I was raised sort of with that ideal in mind. My parents had always been teachers. They came from primarily rural backgrounds, and sort of a college education was always something that they perceived as sort of a step up on the ladder. I think what the GI Bill does after World War II, obviously MTSU's history, the GI Bill makes the university what it is today and continues to do so in many ways, is that the successive generations after that GI Bill program, people have seen the benefits of military service. At one time, military service was seen as sort of a punishment. The military historically has never been widely accepted by the American population, unless in times of crisis. And I think after World War II, that began to change. And people saw the military as sort of a great way to get experience, as well as satisfy this this obligation that many people felt to give back something to the community in which had given them so much.
And Don, speaking of the GI Bill, the benefits to the civilian population, the Middle Tennessee populace here, especially at MTSU, are that the offspring of veterans, the children and the grandchildren of veterans who could come to MTSU on the GI Bill, are also more likely to be able to attend MTSU financially because of the upward mobility that that legislation made possible for
Absolutely.
Those returning veterans.
At the time that my wife and I attended MTSU, there was a series of low buildings behind the old library, which was called Vet Village. I don't know if you remember Vet Village or have heard of Vet Village or not, but these were like one room apartments, they weren't the best of housing, but I think they were appreciated. The vets had a place to be there with their families, and I knew then and still know several people who came to MTSU on the GI Bill at that time and probably would not have been able to come here, without it.
The location is in front of the Tom H. Jackson Building, which is where Alumni Relations used to be. It's now used for banquets and gatherings and the Office of News and Public Affairs. It has white columns, but it's not Kirksey Old Main. It's behind Kirksey Old Main and sort of in front of the Voorhees Engineering and Technology Building.
Maybe the second oldest building on campus is.
It sounds about right.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. It used to be the old cafeteria, I believe,
right.
At one time.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. My father says that he took all of his classes in Kirksey Old Main except for gym mm-hmm. when he came here. Mm-hmm. And the James Union Building was the equivalent of what the KUC is today. Mm-hmm. But in any event, the ceremony will be at 11:30 in the morning on November the 14th, which is the Saturday after Veterans Day. There will be all of the pomp and circumstance that one might expect for an occasion of this, both the solemnity and celebration. And we'd like to invite all of the public to attend. And Derek, if folks would like to get a brick, make a donation, what do they need to do?
If you'd like to purchase a brick for the Veterans Memorial, you need to log on to mtsu.edu/veterans. That will take you to our brand new veterans homepage here on campus. And on the menu bar to the left of the screen, you will find a spot to click on the Veterans Memorial page. And that click will take you to a link that will allow you to get the forms for the memorial and to send it in to the responsible parties.
And for those of our friends who are maybe not cyber savvy, maybe they don't do the web, the Robin Kilpatrick in the College of Liberal Arts is located in the Todd Building, and she will be happy to help anyone who needs assistance in filling out any forms or anything of that nature. You did mention that it could be used, this location, for just about anything. And something that I thought of is not only the possibility of demonstrations, but obviously the ROTC thought of commissioning ceremonies. It can be used as an outdoor classroom as well, or when the benches get put in and people have a place to sit down, just a place of quiet reflection. There are a couple of magnolia trees, one on either side of it, with the branches already extending over the memorial. And when those magnolias start to bloom and the fragrance wafts over, it seems to me that it's going to be just quite a nice place to sit and reflect and to think or to pray or to just have a moment of silence, if you will.
I think we're already seeing that. We're sort of rushing the installation of the benches because we've already started to recognize that people are coming to that location and reflecting or sitting or working on their day's events. So I think you're going to see a lot of the space be utilized very well by our students and the members of our community.
The students have been very, very respectful of the space so far. I haven't seen any nonsense going on whatsoever. It's got a few magnolia seeds on it, but
I took some time the other day during homecoming to sit around the memorial and sort of watch people's reaction to seeing it. I know Don had said there's a lot of people that only see it for the first time when they come that direction. And I was really moved by the number of people who came and really had a fabulous response to what they saw here. I think they see it as one of the more positive things done on this campus. Mm. I think it gives a great positive energy. Mm.
Several times I've passed by and I have seen where somebody has planted on different occasions a little miniature American flag in the soil right next to it. And then this is not part of any ceremony or anything. Somebody just decided it was what they wanted to do. Mm. And they did it. Dr. Derek Frisbee and Don Witherspoon, thank you for being our guest today on MTSU on the Record.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
In the interest of full disclosure, I'm also a member of the Veterans Memorial Committee. I didn't want to say that until the end because it isn't about me. It's about the memorial. It's something that we hope that will be a lasting tribute to not only the veterans who perished, but to all military veterans, past, present, and future. I'm Jenna Loeb. Please join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com. And we're also available on iTunes.